of law school, baby. It all starts here.
Caleb Parsons is 6'9", swinging 80 to shoot the 30.
Game over, season over. The dude is dead.
What? It's unbelievable.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, April 24th, 2009. Probably our last podcast for this, our spring semester here. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports. And joining me today are
Mike McCall, football beat writer and columnist.
Mike DiFerdinando, basketball beat writer.
Evan Drexler, outgoing sports editor, football writer, and columnist.
All right, we got a lot to talk about today. We are, as promised, going to talk about the Alex Tyus transfer and a lot of men's basketball stuff. We're going to talk about some of the Gators in the NFL draft. We're going to break out the debate between McCall and Evan about what is a sport that we talked about last week. And then we're going to round out the show with our Reggie Nelson and Kyle Jackson awards. So, Mike, let's start us off with the Alex Tyus news.
Yeah, Alex Tyus announced last Friday he's going to be transferring from the Florida program. Leaves a pretty big hole in the Florida front court. Obviously, he's a starter. Look at McCall's got some stats.
Yeah, last year Tyus had 12.5 points, 6.2 rebounds per game. And there was a lot of speculation about why he transferred. I know there are a lot of rumors that his girlfriend, volleyball player Allie Cicchini, was leaving and he wanted to go with her. And also there's one that his grades were really bad. And then there's another one that he failed the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences test. And all those were wrong. Tyus reached out the way that most people seem to be reaching out now these days with a Facebook status. The Gainesville Sun actually ran an entire story based off his Facebook status. We may have also. Tyus' status said, "I'm going to miss Gainesville. I had a great time. I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. For everyone to know, I decided to transfer because I did not feel I was going to get the opportunity to become the best basketball player I can be, along with a few other basketball factors. Grades are good. It's not because of Allie. Everything is great for her. I will find somewhere that fits me better for basketball." So, D, for why did he transfer?
In my opinion, it comes down to that Alex wanted to play the three. He wanted to play the small forward position and be a perimeter player, and he obviously couldn't do that at Florida because they needed him to play on the inside, especially next year. They're going to play alongside Macklin. But he wasn't going to get a chance to play on the perimeter, and that's what he wanted. So I think maybe it's like an NBA thing. He thinks he can't play power forward necessarily in the NBA. And he wants a chance to like showcase those skills.
But the skills he's talking about, playing on the perimeter, does he have them? I mean,
Have we ever seen him spot up and shoot a three-pointer? No,
he's a great rebounder. He can dunk well.
Yes, he can. He has one hang from the rim.
Yeah, he's one heck of a dunker. But, I mean, his ball handling is all right. I mean, he's not a great spot-up shooter. I've never seen him shoot a three. I don't know if he took one this year, but...
Yeah, that's something. Yeah. In 2 years at Florida, I don't recall him ever having to...
So I don't know if his skill set, like, really matches that of a small forward. I mean, I would say Chandler Parsons is a way better small forward than Alex Tyus is, and they're roughly the same height. It's just a different skill set.
Yeah, and Tyus, especially next year, would have been, like, the prototypical power forward for this team, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't about playing time, because he averaged, like, second most, like, minutes on the team or whatever. He was the starter all season. Yeah. He would have got big-time minutes next year, too. He would have got a chance to play the four instead of the five like he did this year. But that was really out of necessity. So
That has to be the spot that he's best at, is the power forward
Absolutely.
Spot.
Absolutely, especially
he's a little
college.
Too small for center, but he's perfect for the four.
Right, so he played out of position at the five this year, and he wants to play out of position at the three for the rest of his career. Why?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, I mean, he was good. He was good at
the
four, right?
Yeah, I think he could have maybe had a pro career at the four if he really developed his face-up shooting and stuff. I think he had a chance to do that. He would have benefited a lot from playing with Vernon Macklin next year when he was inside, taking up maybe some more of the room, more like the double teams and stuff like that. So I kind of think it's a mistake that he's leaving, but
and still no word as to where he's transferring.
Not yet. He's from St. Louis, so you could see maybe like a Big 12 school, something like that. But I'm not sure at the moment.
All right, let's talk about how this impacts the team with him going deeper. Like, what does this leave? You said a huge hole in the front court.
Yeah, I mean, Vernon Macklin's coming in next year. Donovan says, he's not the savior, but you might have to be at this point. there's always Dan Werner. He'll probably start alongside Macklin next year.
He's always Dan Werner.
3-year starter. Dan's not, not the flashiest guy, but he is solid. He'll be all right. Like, he'll rebound. He'll make some shots. He can shoot, so... Werner's maybe not as good as Tyus would have been, but it's not like he can't play at all.
Is this going to force him to play out of position again, though? Force him to play the four?
I don't think, unless you're going to maybe develop Kenny Cagey a little more and bring him along, it's probably a really big offseason for him out of everyone on the team because they're really going to need that size. So I think Kenny showed some signs that he could be a really good player this year. I think if he develops more over the summer and into next year, maybe somewhere down the line, Kenny eventually starts alongside Macklin.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going to be Dan to start.
KG was an admirable backup.
Yeah.
The center position pretty much all season. I mean, obviously as a freshman, he starts off rough, but he had some great games toward the end of the year, and I think he could do well in the four, absolutely.
And there's always Eloy Vargas, too, who really didn't play much this year because of his foot injury, but he's a big guy, 6'10", so he could provide some minutes in there, too.
I mean, what would you expect from him? I know he played very sparingly this year, and I didn't see it when he did, so, I mean, where's Vargas?
Vargas always looked a little bit shell-shocked when he came in the game. And, you know, I think part of that is because he was a freshman. He was a little nervous. He didn't get a lot of playing time. Because of that, he wasn't really used to being in the game. I mean, he's got the size. From all accounts, he's a pretty decent shooter. He needs to be tougher. I think that's his biggest weak spot. He kind of got pushed around a lot when he did go in the game. He didn't really have an aggressive mentality. That's the one thing KG did have. He was a big guy. And he at times, he really got aggressive and dunked and rebounded the ball well. So I wouldn't expect all that much from Eloy Vargas, but I think KG's the guy that could really provide something.
All right, and how does this affect, you know, maybe their postseason chances potentially? Because I remember early on the podcast, we talked like, you know, this lineup had a chance when it was Macklin, Tyus, you know, Parsons, Calathes, Boyden, possibly Calathes. Like, how does this affect them?
Well, I think the Elite Eight is out of reach now. That was a ridiculous prediction to begin with, but it hurts them a lot. It's like, the areas they were weakened this year, they're weakened again.
Yep.
They'll have a good back way, they'll have good guard play, but they had that this year.
Assuming play this comes back.
And even if they do, they're still all right, because they're going to have Boyden, they have Walker, they've got Ray Shipman. So they've got, like, pretty good guards. Clayton's obviously helps a lot, but their weak spot's still going to be on the inside.
I have to say, I'm feeling great about my prediction I made on that podcast that they will miss the NCAA tournament. It's getting better and better each day, especially if Clayton doesn't come back, so really holding out hope he goes to the NBA, has a wonderful career, and Florida misses the tournament, so I can be right.
Yeah, way to put yourself.
It's looking more and more likely every day with the Florida basketball program's slow disintegration at this point.
Some of the beat writers at the Orange and Blue game last Saturday were joking about how this team is bound for the CBI at this point, which is the third tier postseason tournament below the NIT, which absolutely nobody pays attention to. But yeah, this is not looking good for their future.
I don't think it'll be that bad, but Macklin's going to have to be really good. Yeah. And that's the one thing here. And, I mean, I've heard some rumblings that he hasn't been as great in practice. I mean, did you hear anything about how he was in practice?
I mean, Donovan keeps saying that he's not the savior. He's not this big, intimidating guy that everyone thinks he is. So, I mean, maybe that's true. He averaged 3 points and 2 rebounds at Georgetown. So, and he transferred. I'm sure there's a reason he transferred. That's what Donovan keeps saying. You know, there's a reason he had to leave Georgetown. So
they need to get someone to physically altercate.
They do. He still is. He's a big guy, though. I think he's like 6'10", 230 or 40. He's a pretty big guy. So he could be the big guy inside they need.
Yeah.
But it's all a matter of time. We have to wait and see.
He's the center they need. And obviously it would have been helped if they had another you know, complimentary post player in Tyus, which now they don't have.
One other positive thing that they get next season, and I know McCall forgot all about this person's existence at an earlier podcast, but Adam Allen is coming back next season.
That's
after
true.
He spent almost the entire year injured, and I mean he's not going to help them down low, but he'll help them.
I mean, another 3-point shooter. They got a lot of guys jacking up threes this year. So I mean, it's another body though. He's a big body.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. Is that depth wise, he's there for that.
And then Florida also lost recruit Deshaun Painter, who was a forward. He left. He got his letter of intent to go back to prep school for another year. So that kind of hurt them too.
So another big guy they've lost there.
And of course, Alan Chaney's gone too. So they're really hurting in the front court.
It's really not looking.
Things are not looking good for Florida basketball.
I think at this point they're maybe three deep in the front court.
Wow.
Between the two positions. Four, if you throw Vargas in there. So they have one backup at each position.
That's unbelievable. All right, so let's maybe look at somewhat of a bright side for the Florida basketball program. They recently signed a new assistant coach with a famous last name.
Yeah, Rick Pitino's coming to Gainesville. And Rick meaning Richard, Rick Pitino's son, a longtime friend of Billy Donovan. Of course, Donovan played under Rick Pitino at Providence, and he coached under Kentucky. So Richard Pitino's coming to replace the coaching spot vacated by Shaka Smart, who went to VCU to replace Anthony Grant. So should be a good addition from all accounts.
I remember when Shaka Smart left, I was thinking, like, there's no way they get someone to replace him with as cool a name as Shaka Smart. And then I pulled up and it says, Gators hire Pitino as assistant. I was like, that's it. They did it. I didn't think they could, but they did it. So congratulations on getting Rick Pitino. Maybe he'll stay around. They haven't been able to keep a lot of assistants here, but he's pretty young. So maybe they'll be able to hang on to him for a while.
I think what they need is a young assistant who's going to be around for a while, because if you look back, when they were really recruiting well and playing well, it's when Anthony Grant was one here being the primary recruiter. Then he of course, goes on to VCU, and they do well. And the last couple of years since Anthony's been gone, the recruiting's really gone down a lot, even off the national championships. So I think they wanted Shaka Smart to be that kind of recruiting guy, but he's gone now too, so maybe Richard can fill that gap.
This program has a lot of high expectations because of back-to-back national championships in 06 and 07. But I wonder how different things would be expectations-wise if Donovan had actually stayed with the Magic after he had that foray in the summer of 07. How drastically different would the program look, and would expectations be if that had gone through?
I'm going to say, this might be a little ridiculous today, but I'm going to say Anthony Grant would have come, and they would have made the tournament with Grant, I think. Because I think Grant could have maybe recruited a little better than Donovan could have the last 2 years. Because he made a tournament with lesser teams at VCU and did well. So who's to say he couldn't motivate a Florida team with more talented players?
But you think Grant would have recruited better than the coach who just won two national championships?
Well, all the good players that are on Florida now, he already recruited. He's only recruited Calathes and Parsons and that entire class. So maybe these last couple, the Vargases and the Cages of the world he wasn't involved in. But he could have brought in some other guys too.
And the expectations would have been lower, I think, with Grant. They would have had a little bit of a grace period, whereas now missing the tournament for two straight seasons, fans are not happy with what Donovan's bringing in.
I mean, say they didn't get Grant, though. The expectations would have been... I mean, I think that bringing in Grant would have brought a lot of excitement back to the program. Like, oh, here's a familiar face who obviously knows what he's doing. Whereas if they go get someone else, I don't even know like what names they were even looking at besides him. But, I mean, I think... I don't want to make this sound this bad, but it's almost like the expectations for the Florida basketball program to me are it's like a charade. Like, winning those back-to-back titles, and I know they had success before, I'm not forgetting that they went to the national championship and lost to Michigan State, but it's not a basketball school and a basketball program. It's a football school, and it always will be. And people get these expectations. They get hopped up for a little while, and then it goes away. I mean, right now, it's pretty much dead.
Yeah, it's non-existent at this point.
If this was really the, like, half-football, half-basketball school people tried to play it up into being when they won the back-to-back national championships, there would be people outraged right now at what's happened the last two seasons, and that's not happening. People would be up in arms about all these players leaving. And that's not happening either. So, I mean, I'm glad it's kind of like finally coming out now that it's not a big basketball school.
Yeah, Florida fans are just happy they won in the first place. And right. They're going to live on that for a while.
They had great teams, excellent teams. But I'm saying the program and like the larger scope of things isn't that great.
The expectation is still to get to the tournament every year. I don't think that's anywhere
as it should be, especially with the SEC being what it is right now.
And I think that's the expectation. Make the tournament, maybe win a game or two, compete for the SEC. I think that's a fair goal every year.
Yeah, that's taking a hit for next year, though. I mean, we had this discussion when Calipari got hired at Kentucky about how we thought everything would change. And, I mean, even if Kentucky isn't great next year coming out of the box, like, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen yet. But, I mean, the programs are definitely heading in opposite directions right now.
I just think it's unfair, like, in an athletic program like Florida, to, you know, tell your fans, like, guys, we're just going to try to make the tournament, see what we can do from there, you know, not be like, realistically, we want to win a national championship every year, and we should be in contention for that. Like, telling fans that, like...
But, I mean, you're not telling the fans that, but I think that's what they've come to accept it. I mean, what's their expectation for Ohio State basketball? I think that's a fair comparison to Florida as far as athletic departments. They're going to make the tournament and win a couple of games. Same thing.
We mentioned it before here, though. Florida fans are spoiled by their success. So, I mean, they're obviously always going to want to win.
I mean, the Big Ten is definitely a bigger basketball conference than the SEC, though, which I think changes things a little bit for the Ohio State comparison.
I mean, Ohio State was one game away from being Florida, so being in the same exact situation. Having won one title out of nowhere.
That Ohio State's in a similar situation that like they had their chance and then they would have been okay back to normal now after this like they're
yeah
they're
I mean I don't think Thad Matta's in trouble of losing his job. I don't think there's like grumblings in Ohio in Columbus about the basketball team not doing well, although they made the tournament. So
right, I don't know. I think that I would think that program's a little bit ahead just because it's in it's in the Big Ten, which I think the conference is very important. And I mean, I think that's one of the things that hurts Memphis, where if they don't have a really good coach in there. He's bringing in really good recruits. I don't think Memphis is going to stay as like a power in college basketball. I think you've got to be in a good conference where people care about basketball. And that is clearly not the case in the SEC. I mean, it's not even close.
I mean, I fully expect Memphis to come back down to earth in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia, for instance, Georgia Gymnastics outdrew the men's basketball of this team by several thousand.
Wow.
I mean, so that gives you an indication of where basketball stands.
Wow. That'd be fair. Georgia Gymnastics is 5-time defending national champions.
Right. They're great, but, I mean, still. They outdrew them by, like, 4,000 on average, so.
Is SEC basketball simply Kentucky and then everyone else still after everything that's happened?
I still view, and I a lot of people like have a problem with me saying this, I still view Tennessee as like one of the headliners for the SEC. I know Florida, I'm not saying, no one in the last decade has had as much success as Florida in the SEC. And in the nation, you can argue that too, because they won back-to-back titles. That's huge. But as a program and the strength of the program and the visibility of the program, I would put Kentucky and Tennessee ahead of Florida.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I guess right now, it's just to me, Tennessee doesn't have the history as a great program. I mean, they're developing one right now, but like, you know, what is it? They never made it past the Sweet 16 before?
Yeah.
That's true. I guess a lot of it has to do with the perception and the hype they got getting two seeds a couple years in Bruce Pearl and everything. But Florida, I guess being at Florida, I've only been to one game at Tennessee, and I know it was unfair that it was on ESPN, they had game day, and it was against Florida. But Florida is just a dead basketball school to me. And I'm coming from ACC country, so maybe that's not fair either. But it's not. I feel nothing here, except for the back-to-back national championship years. But other than that, I mean, if you don't have fan support when you're not great, which Tennessee had plenty of when I was there, I mean, it was outrageous. Mm. And I mean, the stadium's a lot better. They draw better. I just think that all goes toward it, though. I mean, having a better stadium is part of what makes you a better program and makes you a stronger program, a stronger face for college basketball. And that's just what I think about Tennessee.
And you guys are all at basketball games this year at the O-Dome. I mean, did you feel like there's an excitement there? I kind of feel like fans are still lingering on to the excitement from the championships, and it's almost run out at this point.
Right, I'm with you. And the student sections really died off from my freshman and sophomore years here when things were really crazy. It's not – every once in a while, like, you'll hear them do something funny or something creative. But for the most part, it's pretty lame, and it just seems like they're posers to me.
My freshman year was the first year they won the national championship, and – even before anyone realized this team was any good, I think they started off with 16-0, something like that. But at the beginning of SEC play, I remember there was a game against Vanderbilt early on, and I got to the game 10 minutes before tip, and I was sitting in the fourth row in the student section. I mean, not until this team was a serious title contender did they start showing up, because they had just never had it here before.
It's a sideshow is what basketball is, and if it's doing well, it'll draw people, and if it's not, it won't. I mean, there's stuff on TV, there's other stuff to do. And people will go do that.
Yeah, I mean, these are the same fans that show up like 100,000 strong and like paint themselves for football every Saturday. I mean, so it's not like they're not fans.
These are the same people who 65,000 of them showed up for a spring scrimmage with everyone injured at the Orange and Blue.
Yeah, to see John Rantley throw
some passes. Someone mentioned this on the podcast last week. There's no way 65,000 people.
Right.
No, close to 50.
That was a crazy random.
The UAA took some liberations with the
I believe
the
Phil
numbers.
Said there were a lot of invisible fans there for 65,000 people.
It was more than half full, though, I would say.
Yeah, but it wasn't 65,000. The entire left and right upper decks were empty.
Right.
Yeah. Going back to what you said, though, like between, you know, the fans being excited this year, I remember last year I felt like there was more excitement, which goes back to what McCall was saying about, you know, it's just the lingering effects of a national championship being so close that's what keeps people excited.
It's coming back down to earth now. I mean, everyone's realizing, okay, this is our place in college basketball. Like, this is what's fair to expect, and this is what's not fair to expect. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years. I mean, I'm sure Boynton's going to generate a lot of excitement when he comes in here. People will be here. People should fill up the O'Connell Center early in the season to see him play, especially if Calathes comes back, see how the team starts out. But if they don't run through the earlier part of their schedule, if they're not able to – I mean, I'm assuming – the schedule's not out yet, but I'm assuming they're going to play a bunch of patsies like they normally do. If they can't handle that stuff, they need to beat Florida State next year also. I know FSU's good, but they need to beat Florida State. I mean, if they can't do those things, I think they're going to lose everyone's attention again. It's going to be just like this year.
Yeah, I think what they need is they need Boynton to be great. They need like a transcendent player who's like on TV all the time and gets a lot of hype, because then people will go see that guy. Maybe it's Boynton, maybe it's Calathes if he comes back. But people will go and see talent more than they will maybe a team necessarily, if, you know, tradition's not necessarily there.
Does this program need Nick Calathes next year? I mean, if Calathes isn't here, they're kind of, you know, lacking in that star power. Boynton's a freshman, but I kind of think this program needs Calathes to come back.
Absolutely. I mean, you hear a lot about the face of Florida football, whoever Meyer designates. I mean, he's the face of Florida basketball.
Yeah.
Even looks a little bit like Billy Donovan. I mean, Nick Calathes,
more than a little, but
Nick Calathes is the poster boy for Florida basketball, and that's what people identify Florida basketball with right now. And if he leaves, I don't even know. I mean, yeah, I guess like Irving Walker.
Dan Werner would be the face of Florida basketball.
He would be,
now,
wouldn't he?
Oh, man. Vernon Macklin. I mean, Kenny.
No,
but all three of those guys, all three of those guys are like real wishy-washy. Calathes is the definite guy that you need here, and losing him, that's a big problem.
If Calathes didn't come back, then you could say, okay, Tyus is the face of Florida basketball because he would have been the next best player on the team, but now he's gone, so
Calathes
is gone, they're losing their top two players, and all the fans would have to cheer for is Dan Werner and company, and it's just, it's not a team that generates a lot of interest without them, I think.
And talking about the schedule a little bit, I'm not sure if the whole schedule's out yet, I know they play Xavier next year. They'll play NC State again on the road. And they're also doing the SEC Big East Challenge next year, which I believe is new.
Yeah.
And they're going to play Syracuse in a rematch. They lost to Syracuse this
year.
They're
going to play Syracuse on December 10th at the St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa.
So maybe there'll be some soft teams around there, but there's a few decent teams out there.
They're going to add in some decent out-of-conference.
Yeah.
Isn't the Xavier thing going to be, they're going to go to Xavier in 2 years or something? Are they Xavier?
It might be. I'm wrong.
I believe that's what I heard, which I give them a lot of credit for doing, because that's something they really shied away from. They're going to have to go to Xavier, I guess, in 2 years. I think they host them next year.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. That'll be cool. I mean, those are the things that they need to do to promote. I mean, they're going to have to work a lot harder to promote Florida basketball now in the national scene because, like I said, the charade has ended. Like, the smoke has cleared and Florida isn't holding any more national championship trophies. So, and they're not looking to have any more soon. So they need to do things to promote themselves. They need to play these games to get on TV. The Syracuse game, I think, is going to be on ESPN. So that's good for them. And going to Xavier, I mean, I'd imagine that'll probably be on TV too.
They could also stand to go to a couple of those preseason tournament things, like Coaches versus Cancer Classic or Maui Invitational. They go and see some good competition. We had this discussion earlier in the semester about playing bad teams doesn't help you in the long run. And your example is Tennessee played a hard schedule early on and then made it to the tournament based on their out of conference schedule, whereas Florida played nobody's and got nowhere.
Yeah, I think that's been an interesting thing the last couple of years with Donovan, since he's had teams that he's trying to develop. I mean, there's the two strategies you can go with. There's the play the tough competition, learn from it and have that for your resume if you can pull off a big win, and then the losses don't hurt you as much. Or play the weak schedule, try and get yourself together for the conference. I mean, I think there's merits to either one. It seems like lately people have wanted to go the other way just because they've seen the weak schedule fail twice in a row now. They want to see something different.
Well, I think we've seen the last couple of years that the committee doesn't penalize you for losing to a good team. So you really have nothing to lose by playing good teams.
And beating those terrible teams just makes your losses count even more when you lose to, Georgia or whoever it is.
And the first national championship season, they went to the Coaches versus Cancer Classic, and they beat Syracuse and Wake Forest that year. And both of those teams came in ranked, and Florida was unranked. So that was a big way to begin the season and really get going on that run.
Yeah, that was the springboard of their entire championship run. So
and back then, no one had ever heard of Joakim Noah or Al Horford or Corey Brewer. I mean, these were no-name people, where the Tyler Hansbroughs of the world, as a freshman, was getting all the publicity, and Joakim Noah as a sophomore no one had ever heard of.
All right, before we move into the NFL draft talk, let's talk a little bit about the Gators going to the White House, meeting President Obama. McCall?
Yeah, the Gators went to the White House on Thursday, the first championship team to visit Obama at the White House. Things went pretty well. Obama gave a shout-out to tackle Marcus Gilbert, because Gilbert's dad, Jeff, was actually the first Secret Service guy assigned to Obama 2 years ago, I guess, when his campaigning first started. So Marcus Gilbert's dad was with Obama all throughout his campaign, and he singled out Marcus Gilbert even before he singled out Tim Tebow yesterday at the White House, which is pretty monumental. I think Gilbert should be very proud of that. And then also, of course, some news had to come out about a Tebow-Obama meeting. I guess Tebow leaned over, shook Obama's hand, and said, "We're behind you and we're praying for you." So there you have it, the great meeting between Tebow and Obama.
I just want to ask, which Gilbert protects the more important person? His father protecting Obama or Gilbert protecting Tebow?
I'm going to say Tebow. Gilbert protecting Tebow. Actually, Obama needs it more, probably, than Tebow does. Tebow can take a hit. The kind of hits we're talking about, Tebow can take one and Obama probably can't. So.
All right, anything more about the White House? Is there anything interesting come out of that?
No, I mean, the one thing I was wondering, and I haven't been able to find it anywhere, is whether or not Percy Harvin was there. Cornelius Ingram presented the jersey to Obama. It was a number one jersey, so it was Harvin's number. But I haven't been able to find Harvin in any pictures or any write-ups about the event. And he hasn't really surfaced too many times since some of these allegations about him have come out.
Right, speaking of Harvin and Ingram, let's talk about the NFL draft stuff. It's coming up Saturday, maybe today when you're listening to it. So let's talk about that. Where do we think the Gators
are? Maybe last week when you're listening to it.
Yeah, if Phil Kegler is listening to this in his TV schedule format. All right, where do we think some of these Gators are going to go? Percy Harvin, Lewis Murphy, Cornelius Ingram, Phil Troutwine, Jason Watkins.
I say this with very limited knowledge of the NFL draft because I don't pay attention to much of it. So I'm totally winging this. I'm going to say Harvin goes in the first round to the New England Patriots. I really like that pick. The Patriots could use him, and I know Meyer and Belichick are real tight. And the other day, Meyer's quote, like a week or two ago, saying, "I just hope he goes to a good team with good coaches." Everyone immediately said, "He's going to the Patriots because him and Belichick get along so well." Then I think Lewis Murphy probably goes in the third round, maybe same thing for CI, and then Jason Watkins in the sixth or seventh. Although, I've heard, this changes a lot, I know. I mean, for a while, it was Jason Watkins doesn't matter. Then it was like, oh, he's kind of a dark horse. People like him. I don't know where he stands.
Long arms, good feet.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's where I stand on it.
Yeah, the Percy Harvin news is, like, it's a little troubling for Florida fans. Of course, it came out yesterday that he officially did fail the drug test at the combine. So, his draft stock's been really up and down these last couple weeks. I could see him falling far. I mean, do you maybe buy into the Patriots? There's a conspiracy theory out there that maybe they're pushing his draft stock down to get him.
I'll say that's a great idea if they are. Because you can get Percy Harvin for a bargain price in like the 20s or wherever they're picking or the high teens. That's great if you can do that. I don't really have a problem with it if they are. I'm sure Percy Harvin might.
Yeah. I mean, I still think Percy's going to be a really good player. I think he's going to go pretty high. I like him going to Minnesota. I believe 17 is the pick. And then I'll say Lewis Murphy and CI. I think CI maybe goes in the second round, Murphy in the third, and then Watkins in the other lineman is anyone's guess.
Yeah, there's no
we
way.
We should point out that the other lineman is Phil Troutwine, by the way.
Sorry, Phil.
There is no way Percy Harvin falls out of the first round. I don't care about it. We talked about this last week, that all this stuff swirling around, it does not change the fact that he's a huge NFL talent, and he cuts like nobody's business. So he will be in the first round without a problem. Murphy and CI, probably third round area. I like Watkins. I think he might have a really good NFL career. He'll go probably fifth or sixth round. I wish Bobby were here, though, because he'd have more specifics on the linemen.
Quick feet, man. Long arm. That's what you need. Good hands.
I have to take issue with one thing, though. This whole thing with Harvin and the drug test started with an NFL Draft Bible reporter that said several sources in one team told them that Harvin, I believe it was B.J. Raji and Vontae Davis, all failed tests for marijuana.
And then
the
two guys from USC, too, yeah.
Right, were they steroids?
Maluga was like pot, and Cushing was steroids.
So everyone pretty much bashed that as not being true, and then Pro Football Talk came out and said the same thing, confirming it, and then it was a little bit more accepted, and now Fox Sports puts up a story, I guess a day or two ago, confirming it, not even mentioning the other two stories. That rubs me the wrong way, that like even if a website isn't like fully established, but like if they put out they have this story with these sources, and then everyone just bashes it, and then when everyone else confirms it, they don't even give them credit for it. That bothers me.
Yeah. ESPN does this. We've talked about it. Like, in the bottom line, I'll say ESPN.com has confirmed this, but they don't say where the initial report
ESPN
came from.
ESPN announced it yesterday on TV. Like, it was brand new news. It was shocking. Yeah.
And here's one more thing. Pro Football Talk earlier this week said that the covers for the NCAA 2010 video game from EA Sports we're going to feature, of course, they have regional covers. They're going to have USC quarterback Mark Sanchez. They're going to have Percy Harvin. They're going to have Brian Arakpo. And now it's come out that it's going to be Sanchez, Arakpo, Utah quarterback Brian Johnson, and no Percy Harvin. So Harvin may have been pulled from that. Not totally sure. But I mean, I guess it was all rumor that it would be those guys, but then Harvin's the only one who's been taken out that was in the potential pool. So, I mean, if this marijuana thing's really hurting him that bad, these are endorsements he could be losing. This is a lot that's happening for him.
Does that story say he announced that he was going to New York on Twitter?
Sanchez?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sanchez did. Twitter's really getting at
it. I can't stand Twitter.
That's a joke, no.
I don't know if Percy's a big video game guy, but if I was going to be on the cover of NCAA or it got pulled, that'd be heartbreaking to me. So I got to imagine he's upset about this.
Has there ever been more of a lock for the front cover of an NCAA football game than Tim Tebow for the 2011 version?
It's in stone.
If Tim Tebow is not on the cover, like hell will freeze over. Like that has to happen.
All right, so Evan, you got anything more about your predictions there? Troutwine, where you like your boy going?
Troutwine. I really don't know too much about offensive linemen in the draft, but when I was interviewing him last year for the future, he really sounded confident that he could get into the NFL draft. His confidence might not be shared by the NFL teams, but I don't know. He seemed to like his chances.
I just want to talk a little bit about Percy Harvin, his draft stock. I wrote an article for the Tampa Tribune the other day, and I talked to Mel Kiper about Percy Harvin, actually. And what he told me is that Percy Harvin is a lot like Reggie Bush from the Saints. Not Reggie Bush at USC, but Reggie Bush at the Saints. He's a slot receiver, a pass-catching running back out of the backfield, and a really good player. And he said the way you should look at Percy Harvin is Reggie Bush went second in the draft. If you can get that kind of talent late in the first round, like, any team would be crazy not to take him. So I think for sure he goes first round. I think he'll be really good.
When was this? He wrote an article for the Tampa Tribune?
Yesterday.
Oh, okay. So that should have been in our paper, too, then.
I mean, one of the things you got to look at, I think, with this whole thing with Harvin, with all the drug talk and everyone kind of, like, bashing his character, this has got to really be motivating him. And I think that the wrong perception some people take from this, that, you know, he obviously smokes marijuana and maybe isn't the biggest team guy, is that he's like doesn't care, he's not interested. And I don't think that could be any further from the truth. He's a really competitive guy, probably a little headstrong. And this has got to be really eating him up hearing all these people doubt him. So I would expect to see a very motivated Percy Harvin when he gets into the NFL.
I think the question about the marijuana thing is not necessarily that he smoked pot, because I'm sure like half the league smokes pot. It's that he was stupid enough to show up to a job interview, which is the NFL Combine, having smoked pot, even done it there.
Yeah.
So like, you don't show up to a job interview that you know you're going to get tested for having smoked. Like, he's knew this was coming for months.
Well, as Cedric Daniels says in The Wire to Carver, if somebody burns me once, I'm thinking he might be the last guy to try it again. So you got to think Percy Harvin's learned from this and that he's not going to do this again, that he's going to think before he acts with things like this in the future. I mean, he's going to probably get drug tested a lot, and it can't be that hard for him to hold off now that he's been through everything that he's been through, seeing what he's already lost in terms of money and his draft status and what he could lose in the future being a career. I mean, he's got a good – I know he's friends with Plaxico Burress. He's got a good role model for what not to do. You think he'd be able to learn from this stuff.
And since he did fail the drug test, all the players that fail drug tests at the Combine are automatically enrolled in the substance abuse policy for the NFL. So he will be tested more regularly as a rookie.
And that's in addition to all, like, the rookie, you know, camp stuff they have to go to, all the learning about NFL life and drug testing and all that. I mean, Percy Harvin's going to want – he wants to play football and he wants to make money and he wants to succeed – and I think this off-season stuff is where you're more likely to have him get in trouble.
Yeah.
And once he starts actually playing football again, I think things might be a lot different.
I think another issue for Percy is actually the injury issue that we haven't really talked about much. The weed thing's kind of, you know, more flashy. But he hasn't played a full season while he's been in college. He missed 5 games in his 3 years. Like, was held out of, like, parts of a lot of others. So is he maybe fragile? Is that part of the reason his draft stock's going down?
Anyone you're giving the ball that much is going to get hurt occasionally. I mean, it's a big deal for NFL teams to not want to have him out, but it's not like he ever missed, like, half the season. He missed the Hawaii game last year, missed the South Carolina FAU games with those questionable migraine headaches. But it was never like, oh, Percy's out for half the year. You know, it was never that bad. He found ways to get on the field. And even when he was still hurt and he wasn't 100% healthy, he was great. So, I mean, I think that speaks well for him.
The only injury that ever kept him out for an extended period of time was a heel surgery before this season, but he had it in the offseason and didn't miss much time.
And he didn't have any heel problems this year after that.
Right,
either,
yeah, his heel was fine.
That's important to note. So.
The injury that kept him out of the SEC Championship game was completely unrelated to the heels. Just
right.
an
ankle
thing.
And you could see it on the you could see exactly what it was on the video, the way he rolled his ankle against Florida State.
Yeah.
And then during the Oklahoma game, he played with an injured foot, but he had 170 all-purpose yards and touchdown.
Yeah,
line, so.
He's a great athlete, and he's great with the ball in his hands. And I can't understand why you'd want to pass up on him. I know everyone's real worried, like you said. I mean, if you're going to spend this much money on a guy, you want him to be on the field. And whether it's because of injuries or showing up to the combine with weed in his system, both those don't bode well. But, I mean, I think you can – if you're going to pay a guy this much money and you've interviewed with him and you've talked to him, it seems like they'd be able to find a way to make it clear to him what they need from him. And I think he'd be smart enough to know when to accept that.
And what they need from him is just to be on the field, whether, you know, for, you know, the suspension stuff or for injuries. So I'm going to go ahead and make my predictions here for where they'll go. I'll say Percy goes in the first round. That was my Gator guarantee on Tuesday, agreeing with McCall that he'll go to the Patriots. I think Cornelius Ingram, probably late second round. I'm going to go out on a limb there. I'll say Lewis Murphy maybe falls to the early fourth round, Watkins to the fifth. And I will say Troutwine will be drafted in the late seventh round.
There you go. Good for Phil.
He's getting drafted. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. All right, and let's move on from that into who do we think of those guys will have the best NFL career?
I'm going to take this. Let's go with longest, like most sustained success over a career.
That's got to go to the O-line.
I don't necessarily. I mean, what positions are they playing in the NFL?
It's Watkins, a guard, or a tackle.
Watkins is a guard, right?
Yeah, and offensive linemen, don't they have the longest career of any position?
Yeah, but
in the NFL?
Guards are pretty interchangeable. I mean, tackles are like the real stalwarts of an offensive line. I'm going to say Lewis Murphy. I think Lewis Murphy will be a pretty good receiver in the NFL. I don't think he'll ever be like the number one go-to guy, but I think he'll be able to hang around and have a long NFL career. He'll get a lot of catches. He'll be productive. He'll probably bounce around to a lot of different teams. I think he stays in the league the longest. I think Harvin will be very good for like a 2 or 3 year period where like teams have to actually plan for him. I'm not saying right out of the gate, but I don't see his NFL career lasting for a super long time just because what makes him so special is not the kind of trait that you have for a long time in your career. His quickness is going to go away eventually.
I kind of disagree. I think Percy Harvin will be the star of this Florida draft class, I guess you could say. I think he'll be really good for a pretty good amount of time. I think 6 or 7 years where he's like a very good player. I think Percy Harvin.
I'm going to go with Watkins. I really think the offensive linemen have the best career chances, and they are least prone to injury. I would say, you know, Percy Harvin gets tackled in the open field and breaks a leg, and he's done for, you know, a whole season. I just think, you know, the offensive linemen go unnoticed a lot. They're not the flashiest guys. They're not making 50-yard touchdown catches, but the things they do are so important to a team, and I think that, you know, they have the longest careers, so I'll go with Watkins.
I'm actually going to say CI, barring injuries or, you know, reoccurring injuries or anything like that. I think it's a combination of what you guys were talking about, a position where, you know, you can stay consistent and you can stay as a tight end for a long time, and his body will hold up and allow him to do what he does for quite a bit of time.
So each one of us picked a different player. How about that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how CI comes off of his knee injury. Yeah. He's been working really hard, and so is his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, trying to tell everyone, oh, I'm 100%, I'm back. But until you see him really play football again, you won't know for sure. And Harvin and CI are both cases where they're not the prototypical players at their positions. It's going to be very interesting to see what teams they go to, what coaches they're with, and how they're going to be used. If they're used in the right way, they can both be excellent players, I think, like really good players. But if they're not, they could fizzle out.
Yeah, I think this system is really important for Percy. He needs to be at the right team to do the things that he needs to do to be successful.
All right, and we're going to move on to a debate that started last week, but we didn't really have the time to get into it, and we're going to go ahead and dive headfirst into it now. Evan, you said gymnastics was not a sport.
Yeah, last week we were talking about, during the gymnastics discussion, it came up that someone said gymnastics is a sport, someone said it wasn't, and also golf got thrown in there. And so McCall and I had a little back and forth about what is a sport, and I refused to talk about it last week because I feel very passionately about these things. So anyway, here is the Evan Drexler 5-point plan for what you need to be a sport. Number one, you need some offense. Number two, you need defense. Number three, you need an objective method of scoring, meaning no judges, no time requirements. You need points, runs, goals, something like that. Four, you need direct competition between two sides. And I'm sure that one will be a point of contention. Direct competition between two sides. And then number five, of course, is physical exertion in some way. So there's the Evan Drexler 5-point plan. And that gymnastics is disqualified by the objective method of scoring system and the defense and offense system. Also, it doesn't meet three of my four. Also, direct competition between two sides. So gymnastics is really just physical exertion, not a sport. And golf, also, there's no defense involved at all, and it's not a direct competition between two sides. You're playing against a course in a field of 100 people, not just one-on-one.
All right, I'll give you golf and gymnastics, but track and field is absolutely a sport. It's the original sport. Running is the original sport.
I would disagree. I think
Usain Bolt isn't an athlete that competes in a sport.
I didn't say he was an athlete. Being an athlete and being a sport are not, they're not tied together. I'd say the gymnasts are athletes, but I don't think they're participating in the sport.
Right, what about boxing? Is boxing a sport?
Yes, boxing is a
sport.
But
it's scored. It's judged.
Ah, okay. So a TKO in the situation where someone gets knocked out, that is an objective method of scoring. But in a case where it goes down to a final round, then that was not a sport.
So boxing is only a sport in certain situations.
Yes, boxing is a sport when it's not.
So that's ridiculous. If we're going to different situations, is running two people one-on-one against each other a sport?
There's no defense.
No defense.
No.
Okay.
But roller derby would be then, since they can hit each other or something?
Why not?
All right, I'm kind of like, my brain signal to adjust this. I'm kind of baffled. I really don't agree with the defense component. Like, in the case of golf, you're competing against other people, plenty of other people. They're not trying to stop you necessarily, but you're all trying the same thing to see who does the best at it. And it's very physical. It's very technical. Yeah. I think golf is definitely a sport. I think I also classify gymnastics as a sport. Absolutely. I do want to know what you think about this. You said, I don't know who brought up that gymnastics is an Olympic sport, and you said you don't think that being in the Olympics necessarily makes you a sport. So I want to hear.
We got into that a little bit too. Is that my argument was that it's called the Olympic Games. It's not called the Olympic sports. So there are sports in the Olympics. You have soccer and you have baseball. Those are sports that are in the Olympics. But then you also have things in the Olympics like, sports shooting and things that aren't sports, but they are athletic competitions or events or games.
So you're eliminating all the iconic sports from both the summer and winter Olympic Games. Track and field, swimming, skiing,
ice skating.
Anything that's like iconic is not a sport.
Yes.
Okay, I think you're very wrong.
All right, in Olympic terms, I'm getting this from the only true source of information, Wikipedia. A sport in Olympic terms is a single or group of disciplines represented by an international governing body. So, like, you have to have an international federation of soccer or whatever it is to make it a sport.
Disciplines?
Disciplines are, like, within the sport, like, the different breakdowns of a sport. Like, for instance, I guess, like, different distances and running. Since they're different events, like, within a sport, I guess. So, all these international federations are wasting their time, in your opinion? It's not a sport, it's just like a club for some activity.
You can have an international federation for an event or a game. I'm just, this is my definition of the word sport, and I don't think things like ice skating are involved at all in sport. All
right, so do you think NASCAR is a sport?
Because
can play defense, they can like angle each other out and cause wrecks and stuff. That there's defense in NASCAR.
They're going against time though. It's a time thing. It's not like
But it's the first one to complete something. It's
right,
the same thing as like a short distance. It's just for longer.
It's like it's similar to golf, where like you're shooting for a score, but you have to beat someone else's score.
Yeah.
So you're in direct competition with someone else.
But not two people. That's the thing. It has to be like two sides, one on one, a team versus a team.
There's several.
There's
more than two. There's more competition.
And what do you think about the subjective components of game of sports, like baseball, like things you wouldn't contend with?
Yeah, balls and strikes.
Balls and strikes that can have a huge impact on the game. That's totally subjective. And
but the bottom line, you're not winning a game by a ball and a strike. You're winning a game by runs. And
if you step on home plate, that's a run.
And that's a solid run.
I mean, you can also not step on home plate and be ruled that you did and score a run.
On the scoreboard, you have 5 runs versus 3 runs. That is a clear winner.
And on the gymnastics scoreboard,
that's
subjective.
So is a time in a race.
Yeah.
That's a clear winner. I mean, 1 minute and 10 seconds beats 1 minute and 11 seconds. It's a clear winner on a scoreboard.
Yeah, I just don't think time counts as an objective method.
Gymnastics scores, though, once they're made official, they go up on the scoreboard. They are then objective that's on the board.
There's no way you're going to convince me gymnastics is a sport.
I just want to ask, what was your job title last semester?
Sports editor.
Did we or did we not cover gymnastics, golf, track?
We did, in fact, cover those things.
Swimming.
But they do not fit into the student government role, so I think they kind of just fall into the sports section.
Would you like to change the job title to athletic competition editor?
Yes, that would be fine with me.
You think sports and athletic competitions are different?
Yeah, I think sports are athletic competitions, but not all athletic competitions are sports.
I gotta say,
a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square.
I totally don't agree with all of your lists there. Although I see the logic in all of them, and I appreciate it. But one thing I'm very happy, I disagree with you totally on what a sport is, but I'm very happy you're not going down the road of like, oh, you're not an athlete if you do this or
that.
Oh,
no, there's no question that someone who runs track is an athlete.
Right.
I just think the word sport is different from the word event.
And golf and gymnastics even too. And even NASCAR, because it's someone who's like, I believe the definition of an athlete it's a person who's trained or skilled in exercises, sports, or games requiring physical strength, agility, or stamina. So all those things would count. So
there's no doubt that it takes a lot of stress to drive a car for 3 hours, in a NASCAR race, but I just don't think that's a sport at all.
I certainly think NASCAR is not a sport.
Okay, good. You're with me on this.
Why
is NASCAR not a sport for you?
I would say that horse racing is more of a sport than NASCAR is.
But is it a sport?
What, horse racing?
Yeah.
No.
We can't get into what's like closer and further away.
I said more of a sport. In NASCAR, the car is doing all the work. You're a driver. You're skilled, but you're not an athlete. You can be like fat and be a NASCAR driver. You can be like Mark Martin and be like 50 years old and drive a NASCAR.
Which is incredible. I mean, you can be like 40 and be a quarterback in the NFL. I mean, it's not like you're along for the ride.
But it's no different than like driving a car on the highway or like flying a plane or something. It's a skill, but it's not a sport.
It's very different from driving a car. As someone who's been in the pits at a NASCAR race, It's intense, man. The space those guys operate in, how crucial it is the way they shift gears. There's so many technical aspects to it. Planning out when you're going to pit. And these may not necessarily fall into the like your requirements for a sport, but I think it definitely is a sport. If racing is a sport, and you like running, and if you can say horse racing is a sport, which I would, then NASCAR is definitely a sport if horse racing is a sport.
Well, horse racing is a sport for the horses. And in running, it's a sport because you're like exerting your physical ability with your own body. It's a test of the human body. In NASCAR, you're driving the car, and people with the better cars usually win. So there's mechanical factors that play into it. It's not like you can want it more and win. Like, if you have a worse car, you can't win necessarily. And also, with NASCAR...
If you're a slow runner, you can't win, no matter how...
But you wouldn't write... Like, but you have... Okay, that's
if
not a good argument.
With shorter legs. I mean.
But you wouldn't be a runner if you were... had short legs and weren't fast, you know what I mean?
Look, all the NASCAR, yeah, sure, there are stronger like cars in NASCAR than others, but they're all playing with like the same like restrictions and everything that they can meet, and they choose to like, you know, skip a little here and go harder in another aspect of the car, like in terms of like the tightness of the turning and maybe torque, things like that.
Torque. So you have no idea what torque means?
Not much. I think it's like I believe it's how much like the chassis of the car can twist, which allows it more speed.
But these are all mechanical elements. Like in a sport or in athletics, it shouldn't come down to like mechanics.
What do you think about golf though, where like your equipment can be such a major?
Well, I kind of agree with that. Like the way golf progresses, people are hitting the ball like, you know, 350, 400 yards or whatever now. I mean, not 400, but that does change things. It's the same thing with like using a metal baseball bat.
So hitting a golf ball 300 yards is far more impressive than like driving a couple thousand pounds
yes.
of steel between a small crack at 200 miles an hour on a sharp turn.
Yes, because you have to use your body to make a swing that'll hit the ball 300 yards. You can be as strong as you want. I can have the best driver in the world and not be able to hit it 300 yards because I'm not that good at golf. You know what I mean? It's a skill that you have to learn. You have to practice and perfect.
You could also have the best car in a NASCAR race and get dusted. You wouldn't even finish.
But I can give Tiger Woods B clubs and he can beat players – with really good equipment. He can beat lesser players with, like, the best equipment there is.
I just want to clarify, go back to something you said earlier about, like, you know, NASCAR drivers can be fat or whatever and all that stuff. Like, CeCe Sabathia is a fat, fat man, and he's pitching in Major League Baseball.
But CeCe Sabathia can throw a baseball, like, 90 miles an hour. You know, it's... He's fat, but he's not moving.
Well, NASCAR drivers can drive their cars really fast.
No, but the car's moving. CeCe Sabathia is throwing a baseball. NASCAR drivers may not necessarily be good at anything else athletic.
Ditto. Same with anyone.
Yeah.
No. But like NASCAR drivers maybe can't run a mile or like catch a ball or anything. Like
how fast do you think CeCe Sabathia runs a mile?
I bet CeCe Sabathia is athletic and good at other sports. Like I bet he's good at other ball sports. Like,
you said run a mile.
Yeah. I know that he's fast.
Do you not think running a mile is part of baseball players' training? I think baseball players have to run.
Not CeCe, but at one time he probably did.
At some point he could run a mile, yeah.
I'm just saying the mechanical element of NASCAR makes it different to me because you're bringing in other factors that aren't necessarily a test of the human body.
I will accept that.
I still don't think it has to be. I mean, there's equipment in every sport, and that's just the equipment. Just because the equipment you happen to be using is bigger than you and you're sitting in it, I don't think should penalize.
But the equipment in NASCAR determines the performance, like 100%. Equipment in other sports, like if you're wearing a different kind of cleat in football, maybe it changes a little bit. Not really. Having a better pair of cleats, is it going to make you infinitely a better player? In NASCAR, having a better car is going to make you win the race on that alone.
Not necessarily. There's a lot of skill still involved. I mean, you can drop, like, all right, just if you were to go down, like, the money winners list in NASCAR and take, like, the 30th driver and put him in the number one guy's car and put the number one guy in the number 30 guy's car, it's definitely not a clear-cut thing that the lesser driver with the better car would win. Absolutely not.
I'm not saying that there's different levels of skill in NASCAR if there's anything else. And you can be better at driving a NASCAR than like someone else can. So obviously that would translate in what you're saying. But as far as whether or not it's a sport, I think the fact that there's all this mechanical stuff involved kind of disqualifies it.
I mean, there's a lot of mechanical stuff involved in
but
golf.
But not as much.
Kind of the swing you use.
The mechanic, it's all machines in NASCAR. That's the sport.
I think that you're not giving the drivers and the pit crew enough credit.
The pit crew are not athletes. They don't do anything. They change tires and stuff. Which is they can do it really fast, but they're not athletes.
I would count them more on like the coach side, although it's certainly different with NASCAR. I mean, I haven't really, I'm not enough for like a NASCAR.
No,
guy to just kind of figure this out.
The Pickery people are like trainers at best.
No, they're like, I mean, you have like a spotter who's guiding you through accidents when you can't
you
see.
You do have,
it.
Yeah.
So he's like got, he's really good with binoculars there.
They're working.
I mean, what? A third base coach is really good at looking around the field.
No, third base coaches aren't athletes either. They're coaches.
That's what I'm saying. The pit crew guys are like coaches.
Maybe.
The crew chief, maybe, but the guy who changes my tires.
Yeah, the guy that's
coach.
Like putting the gasoline and pulling the trigger on the gasoline isn't doing anything. I could do that. Man.
Okay, fine. But the spotter and the guy who's like planning out when you pit, and I think that.
There's strategy, but strategy doesn't make a sport.
I can't believe we've talked this much about NASCAR right now. This is blowing my mind. Let's get back to some actual sports.
I want some feedback. If you're out there listening, email in whether or not you think NASCAR is a sport. I think America agrees
about
with
all
me.
Of it. Email all of these. I'm going to accept that I'm on the losing side of the NASCAR debate in the public's eyes, but I'm going to stand by it as a sport.
You were in the pits, after all.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, but we all awesome. The rest of us agree, like gymnastics and track.
Yeah.
Do you, McCall?
That are a sport.
Yeah,
absolutely are a sport. I think, and you made a good point, track being like the original sport. I mean, running against someone is about as basic as it gets. I think that has to be a sport. I think maybe we could hammer out some amendments to you. Would you?
Amendments?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll propose one and then we have to pass it.
I think defense has to come. I think the offense-defense thing should be pulled because I think defense needs to be pulled, and if you're going to pull defense, you can't just have off because then offense doesn't really make
sense. Why do you think defense needs to be pulled?
Because track is a sport.
How about just there has to be competition?
There has to be competition.
Two
so
or more
circular.
Individuals.
The logic is so circular. It has to be pulled because it's a sport, but it's a sport, but it's not a sport because defense is.
If you're, I think it just needs to be that you're competing against someone else.
All right. Well, I don't know. These are my requirements, and you have different requirements, and defense different requirements. I think you need defense for a sport.
So track is not a sport.
I don't think track is a sport. No, okay. I think it's an incredibly difficult athletic event that there is no way in hell I would be able to do. But I don't think it's a sport. And sport is just one small word in the dictionary that I like to argue over. But I have no doubt that these runners are amazing at what they do. I just don't think they're athletes, but they don't compete in a sport.
All right, so you said between two or more individuals. So other than, like, maybe tennis, is there another, like, two-person-only sport where there's defense?
Like a one-on-one?
Yeah.
Ping pong? Ping pong's a sport.
That would fit your guidelines, yeah.
Yeah, fit your guidelines.
That fits my guidelines, yes.
Maybe like the really crazy like Asian ping pong where they're like 10 feet off the table.
only Asians are gonna ping pong.
Yeah.
Sorry for stereotyping.
I just love that in your qualifications, ping pong is a sport, but track, the original sport, is not. That's unbelievable.
Ping pong, right? Pool's not a sport though. I don't think anyone would have that argument.
No.
Pool's a sport. Okay, good. Pool's
not. Swimming is also not a sport.
Yeah. You're so dismayed by my
Yeah, I'm really baffled.
So Usain Bolt and Michael Phelps do not compete in sports.
No, but
mind.
They're athletes. I don't think they would be offended by me saying that they're.
I think
they're
not they
would a sport, be. But they're like amazing, talented athletes.
So if we talk to like a track runner at UF and said like you're not in sports,
well, okay, fine. They might be slightly hurt, but they're still like their gold medals count as much as the U.S. basketball team's gold medals. It's not like that, you know. The Olympic Committee sees them in any lower form.
Above
and
all,
I
think they consider themselves athletes.
Yes, and I'm not contending that point.
Rather than sportsmen and sportswomen. So,
Evan's not here to save feelings, okay?
Evan's here to break hearts, crush spirits.
Sorry, Corey Hartung. You're not a sport person.
a sportsman, if you will.
No, but what sportsman is, sportswoman.
Sportsman is unisex.
How is sportsman unisex?
I agree. I think a sportsman.
It's like sportsman of the year. Yeah, a woman would be sportsman of the year.
What about waiters? Waiter unisex? You know, waiter and waitress?
No, those are gender-based, but...
And sportsmen isn't.
But they're servers now. They're not waitresses. They're flight attendants.
The gender-neutral term for waiter, believe it or not, is waitron. W-A-I-T-R-O-N.
That
waitron.
Sounds like a robot.
Like, it does.
Waitron.
Yeah,
like Voltron.
Waitron 3000. Evan and I just said it at the exact same time. That's absurd. We've spent too much time together at the office this semester.
Waitron.
All right, and with that, let's agree to disagree, and let's move on to our final segment here. All right, we're going to give out our weekly Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week, the last ones of the semester. McCall, start us off.
Okay, we're going to give a table-wide Reggie Nelson Award to Patrick Schuster from Mitchell High near Tampa through his fourth straight no-hitter this week, which is totally ridiculous. We mentioned, I guess, two podcasts ago when he had three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone expected him to actually come out and do it again. These teams he's doing this against should have no respect for themselves when they leave. Coming in knowing this guy's got this many no-hitters in a row and not being able to muster a hit, that's pretty lame. And a team-wide Kyle Jackson here is going to go to the New York Times. Still on their website, the headline for the story about the Gators going to the White House is Obama lauds Florida State Gators. That's incredible to me. Those three words look so bad together. Yeah. Florida State Gators. I don't understand how you can't catch that.
Take that, New York Times. Beacon of journalism.
Getting to mine, before I sat down here and started looking around the internet, I was going to give mine to the Jaguars for getting new uniforms and helmets that change color under the lights, which I think is pretty cool. They use auto paint technology. It changes. It's black, but then when you see it in the light, it gets kind of teal. It's kind of cool. And they change up.
This is a horrible idea.
They change up. You haven't even seen them. They change up their logo and their jerseys, which I like. The Jaguars never do anything exciting, so for them to get some new jerseys, new logo, I think is pretty cool. But instead, I'm going to give it to Phillipsburg High and Easton Area High, a joint Reggie Nelson. They're both in Pennsylvania. Since 1906, these two teams have played each other in the rivalry game on Thanksgiving Day. It's one of the biggest high school rivalries in the country. Well, in 1993, these teams tied 7-7. They did not have an overtime rule back then. Nobody was happy about this. No one got the coveted fork trophy that the winner gets every year. So Gatorade, I guess a couple months ago, decided they wanted to organize a replay of this game. They're going to replay it this weekend. The guys are all in their 30s. Some of them are losing their hair. They sold out 10,000 tickets in 90 minutes, and Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are going to serve as the honorary coaches. I think this is a great idea because so many fans leave ties disgruntled and unhappy about it, and you wish you could see something different. Mm. And great for these guys to get back to their glory days, play some football, and settle a winner. I love it. I think it's a great idea. I'm sure Gatorade's going to make a lot of money off of it somehow. And my Kyle Jackson, this is kind of staying in-house, but not really. Going to Matthew Meltzer, who was an Alligator guest columnist this week, wrote a letter that Tim Tebow's charity works that were heralded in the Alligator the week before by another columnist. He said that column failed to consider ulterior motives, that Tebow's really doing all this charity work to up his NFL draft stock. Well, Matthew Meltzer, you, sir, are an idiot. You're one of the dumbest people I've ever read in print, and I'm very ashamed that this ran in our newspaper. I try and like keep Tebow hype under control usually. I hate seeing it get like totally rampant. But one thing you can't attack is that Tim Tebow has a heart of gold. He raised $300,000 in 1 week leading up to the Orange and Blue game. That money went to the Shands Children's Hospital and an orphanage out in the Philippines that will not benefit his family in any way. Otherwise, it'd be a huge violation. And this is stuff that Tebow's been doing for a long time. He was doing it in high school. He was doing it before high school, going out to the Philippines and working with the kids out there. I mean, to latch on to this, you can tell that this Meltzer kid is like tired of the hype, and this is the way he lashed out at it in a totally irrational way without thinking it through. You're an idiot, and I hope you never appear in our paper again, unless it's to apologize for this.
And don't forget, something I told you earlier is that Mr. Meltzer is very good friends with opinions editor Dan Seiko, so Dan Seiko saw this and thought, hey, my friend is writing in, and it's really funny, so I'm going to run it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and lump him into this also.
He was the one who wrote the good Tebow editorial the day before.
Well, still, Bat, it's his fault for letting this run, so I'm going to blame him also.
All right, Deeper.
All right, I'm going to give an emotional Reggie Nelson to our friend Evan here. His last podcast, he's graduating, so well done. Thank you for the service.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Let's give him a golf clap, which he'll hate because it doesn't have anything to do with sport.
And then my Kyle Jackson bat angle of the week goes to Percy Harvin for testing positive at the NFL Combine for marijuana. Way to show up for a job interview, hi, Percy.
It's kind of belated. So you're waiting for the Fox Sports report before you...
It was on ESPN yesterday, which made it fact, apparently.
That's true.
It's timely. The draft's tomorrow.
If you had gone before me, you'd get my Kyle Jackson.
All right, Evan.
All right, so this is my last one. So the only way to do this is to get two hockey references in there, as much as you all are going to hate it. The Reggie Nelson goes to Carolina Hurricanes player Jussi Jokinen, McCall's boy, who scored a game-winning goal against the New Jersey Devils with 0.2 seconds left in the third period. That is the latest goal ever scored in a regulation playoff game to win it. That was unreal. That's a buzzer-beating shot in the NBA times 1,000 because of how rare it is in the NHL.
So that, I didn't even know that was possible. It really opened my eyes a little bit to hockey when
I
saw that.
That is playoff hockey and everything that's amazing about it. If that would have happened in overtime, it would have been even crazier. Like with 0.2 seconds left in the first overtime, you're getting ready to go into a 20-minute intermission, and then just boom, the game's over. And just that's so deflating. The New Jersey Devils goalie Martin Brodeur, all-time leader in wins, was very upset about that. He broke his stick. But anyway, and then my Kyle Jackson award goes to the fans of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, after getting swept by my Detroit Red Wings last night, decided to throw things on the ice. Columbus had, in its 9 years, never been to the playoffs. Its first two home playoff games, they lose 4-1 on Tuesday, and now 6-5 Thursday night. And how do they respond with their first playoff series being over? They throw things on the ice, and they throw things at Detroit Red Wings head coach Mike Babcock. Way to be classy, Blue Jacket fans. You're a disgrace to hockey, and you shouldn't get to the playoffs for years to come. Good work.
Nothing good comes out of Columbus. I've said this for years.
Just certain things you can't stand for, you know?
All right, and I guess I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm going to start with my Kyle Jackson bad angle of the week. It's going to go to Jeremy Tyler, the high school junior who decided to forego his senior year of high school to go play professional basketball in Europe so he could wait around and potentially come back to the NBA. I know a lot of people have made some pretty good arguments, like, sure, it's best for him. You know, he's just doing what he loves. He's, you know, sticking it to the man in the NBA, you know, not playing by their rules. I think it's absurd to not graduate high school in America, and I hopefully am not alone in this argument.
I agree with you. It's absurd to not finish out of high school. But the NBA has no one to blame but themselves for the stupid rule they put in place when history has proven that skipping college doesn't hurt you either from a criminal aspect or a financial aspect. You have more success and a potential to make a lot more money when you skip college.
I don't care about skipping college. Like, graduate high school, take the year off. I know it's not. Go play in Europe then come back. That's my only point. Graduate high school.
Yeah, you have to graduate from high school. This is ridiculous. Like, in any other field you want to work in, you need at least a high school degree. So I hope basketball works out for this kid, or he's going to be in for a world of hurt.
And I know the fear now is that everyone's going to start doing this, and college basketball is going to really suffer, and the NBA will suffer because it will strengthen all the European leagues. But I don't see this happening a lot with kids bailing out of high school early, because while there is a lot of money to be made out there, and a lot of these guys need money for themselves and for their families, it's a really tough decision to leave high school early. Leave everything you know and go to a foreign country. It's different than graduating high school and skipping college and like bringing a whole crew over there, your boys who have their GEDs or whatever. Like, this is
you roll up with a pack of GEDs.
I don't see this getting rampant just because it's so difficult.
Yeah, I just think, you know, not a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, I want to skip my senior year of high school so I can go to Europe alone. You know, I think his dad is not even going with him. He's just going with his brother to play basketball. So, I mean, best of luck, kid. But, you know, when it fails, don't, you know. You have this to look back on.
Don't come crying to Adam Berry.
Because I'm not going to listen to it. All right, and I'm going to give out a final emotional Reggie Nelson Award. I'm going to give it to us here at the Alligator Sports Podcast. A little under 3 months ago, me and Evan were talking about it. We're like, you know what, we're going to do a podcast. We came in here, no clue what we're doing. I'd argue we still don't really know what we're doing, but, you know, it's working for us. And we've come out here, we've done 3 months of consistent podcasts. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed doing it. I know it's been fun for all of us to do here, so... we're going to keep it up. We're going to do some in the summer. We're going to keep this going in the fall. Going to really pick up steam in the fall with football season. You have a lot to look forward to for that. So Evan, any last words on the podcast here?
I think it's only fitting to end it with Go Red Wings.
Sure. And with that, we're out.
Good night, Vince.